Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Chasing the Dragonfather. This week, we are mostly going to be talking about all of the things we've done since we last saw you, including the Belgian Masters XXX. And then on, if the other two let me, I'm going to talk about Denegra 2 a lot.
I'll let you.
Because I think I'm in love.
Hello, I'm Klaas. I'm probably going to talk about Trolls.
I'm currently painting a circle while we're casting, so, yeah.
Well, anyway, don't let appearances fool you. This is still a Crick's cast.
I'm still Crick. Sorry.
Shall we immediately go in the Wayback Machine and talk a little bit about Belgian Masters?
I had a sad that weekend.
I mean, I can fully understand why someone might be sad not to have gone to the Belgian Masters, because you guys put on a pretty excellent show.
Of course we did. We're Belgians and the Masters.
It's true. But for those who didn't go, there's a couple of things that I want to mention off the top for anyone thinking of going in the future. Thing number one, the venue is sweet. There's places to play games all night. There are lots of cool people around. And there is cheap beer there. So,
yes.
Back at the campsite, there is excellent ambiance. Loads of people to chat to. Good times will be had by all. Second, and this is very important, you will be extremely well fed. You will need to bring your stretchy pants.
Yes, you will.
Because there is plenty of food. It is good food. And importantly, there are more desserts than there are courses over the course of that weekend.
Wow.
There is dessert all over the shop.
Yeah.
And that cannot be understated. And did I also
mention the cheap beer? We went all out this time, yeah. And then the cheap beer, yeah. So there's actually beer and dessert. I mean, what else do you want? And even on Saturday, we have grilled meat. So we have grilled meat, beer, and dessert. What the fuck? Nothing else you need.
So that's the important part. I mean, there were some games. There was some War Machine played. There was some Guild Balls played.
Yeah, Guild Ball.
But the important thing is, I think for any event you're planning to travel to, the most important thing is how well do they look after you once you're there? Because you can get games lots of places. Traveling to an event, you're putting yourself in the hands of someone else's hospitality for a weekend. And that's that is a tip for any TO out there running a weekend-long event, especially when you want people to travel to. You got to look after people. You got to make sure they're well-fed, then get a drink if they need it, and that they have an abundance of dessert.
Well, yeah, it's what we really do try to do. I mean, we do try to look after people. Even if they don't walk to the venue by themselves, not looking at a specific Anthony O'Reilly in particular.
Look, that was a perfectly valid choice.
We take care of you. I mean, pick you up from train stations if necessary, or we just get, you know, we take care of you. We just get you sorted. That's what we do.
Again, for the listener, the lift from the train station to the venue on the first night was offered. I just chose not to take it because I'd been, you know, on trains and planes and wanted to be outside for a bit. However, a lift was arranged for me for all other parts of that weekend. Anything I needed was sorted. So yeah, come to the Belgian Masters, they will look after you.
Yeah, I mean, there's no discussion there. We will. Anyway.
Just talking about tournaments in general, like, there's a world of difference between a weekend event that sets up tables and does all the, moves the terrain around, and one that provides everything you need. Like, doesn't necessarily all have to come as part of the ticket price, but if you're traveling to a place you don't know that well, just having the organizers say, hey, we're all going to go to this place, or, you know, making sure no one's wandering around on their own, that kind of stuff. Like, it just makes all the difference to the ambience of a tournament.
And the thing is, you did come by yourself. You were one of the few people to come by yourself. And, well, the fact that you had a great time, kind of warms my heart as well. But, yeah, and it's a bit of a testament to what kind of tournament we want to be in, what kind of tournament we turn out to be in the end.
Well, I mean, you'll hear plenty of talk about how to do the terrain and how much space should be between the tables. Both of those things were good, by the way. But you hear all of those technical procedural bits. And if you're running a one-dayer, you can just focus on that stuff and it's fine.
Yeah.
People are coming and people are going home at the end of the day. But if there's accommodation, people are staying overnight. You want to do something social as the organizer, just to keep the buzz of the event going.
Yeah. And that's what we try to do. We try to recreate the atmosphere of the WDC, just but in smaller version, more intimate and with more home cooked food. Because yeah, all the food is home cooked. It's probably not the same level as what you'd get in a hotel, but you know, you can actually taste the love in there and the elbow grease in some cases. I mean, it's really, you know, comes from the heart, and that's what matters much to me, or most.
It does matter. It makes all the difference. So it's a really good event. More people come to it next year. So my two lists were Scar 1 with a pair of Wraith Engines, Sundry Banes thereafter. So one unit of Riders, two min units of Warriors, and the usual bits and pieces, Scarlock, Scrap Thralls. Dire Wrath was in there. And then the second list, which is, well, the more interesting one, let's be honest, was Denegra 2 in Black Industries.
Ooh.
Worth noting that every single Crix player I spoke to that weekend was playing Denegra 2 in some form. Everybody wanted to play with the hotness.
But you did speak to, I think, only WTC players of Belgium that had Crix.
I saw other people playing games with Denegra 2 as well, who I didn't get to have conversations with. But she was about, that's for sure.
Yeah, she was.
Nice.
Quite a few different lists being played. But my list was Denegra 2, Denegra 2, the Wither Shadow, a Deathjack, two free Night Wretches, a Seether, a Nightmare, an Arnlich Overseer with a Seether on it, a War Witch Siren, a Machine Wraith, and two units of Cephalix Overlords. Since then, I've shuffled some stuff around and gone to... Sorry, there's no Machine Wraith in there. The Machine Wraith's in there now. I've gone for a second Siren now instead of the Arnlich Overseer. It didn't seem to matter that much, and was a point of vulnerability for the list that sometimes the Overseer gets sniped out. So rather than go through kind of each specific game, because it's been a couple of weeks now and it's all a bit fuzzy.
There was then the booze and all the sugar and everything.
Exactly, you know, I was very excitable.
Yeah.
In many ways, it was a tournament of 2 days. Because day one, I played Scar 1. And Scar 1 things happened. I don't think our listeners really need me to talk too much about how Scar 1 double Wraith engine works.
Mm.
You run your dudes forward. Your opponent runs their dudes forward. You kill, depending on how much of his army he put in front of your army, you feat and kill everything. If he didn't put enough in front of your army, you chill out for a little bit. And then you feat and kill his whole army. And, you know, what's left fails to kill your Wraith engines because they have +5 armor. And then you finish everything off. I mean, it's an absolute sledgehammer of a list. If you can't deal with it, you just can't deal with it.
True.
I did have, like, some tough and close games. I had a very difficult game into Exelon Thexus with all of the Cephalix with Scar 1. And that was very hard.
Imagine.
But I was able to basically finagle, and this was as much, you know, luck as anything else. Because Death Ride applies to Wraith Engines, I kind of put my stuff up on top of Thexus, realizing I was never going to kill my way through it. So he, you know, started jamming my stuff up to make it difficult, and thought that he had made it so I couldn't land next to Thexus. But he hadn't reckoned on the extra inch from Death Ride.
Oh.
That huge base fit into that space by a hair. Like an absolute whisker. So, you know, a random drudge had been, you know, 3 millimeters towards me, probably wouldn't have won that game. My game plan at that point was just chase Thexus with Wraith Engines until I catch him. Like, he runs away, my Wraith Engine. If I couldn't have landed after walking, I would have just run my two Wraith Engines on top of him. One of them's getting you eventually. That was the whole plan. That was all the plan I had. I was pretty much never grinding my way through. It was always an attempt to try and get the caster. That was a tough game. It was really fun. But the other two were against Trolls and Circle. And Scar 1 is just tuned so heavily into those matchups.
What did a troll player have? Just out of curiosity.
Cole Grimma. But because I had 4 stalkers that didn't care about being able to see the chart get into you, the Cloud Wall was of limited usefulness.
Yeah, I don't see it with Kogrima. I noticed it, or I tried it just playing against, you know, the toughest opponents there is, which is yourself. I had great trouble beating Madrak 1 with Blitzcar, actually to a point that I would even favor Madrak in that matchup. But Kogrima doesn't, yeah. She just gets to hit. She gets hit too easily. And it's really just taking shit off.
There was one slightly scary moment in the game against Kogrima where my opponent laid down a 10-inch measuring stick, touching Star. Yeah. Moment of like, that's a big spray. But he hadn't laid down a measure for between the where the spray would need to start from and where Kogrima was, and I was trying to eyeball it across the table, just going, oh no. He laid it down and then went to do some other stuff first, and I was just like, dude, just measure the rest, please. I'm freaking out over here. That entire conversation was happening in my head, but I was just like, I don't think you're in. Please put me out of my misery, one way or the other. Long story short, he was not in.
But he had you sweating bullets all through.
Sure did. Like, for a good minute. Yeah, especially, like, that particular sweat of, you thought you had it well in hand, but maybe you just fucked it.
Yeah. That's the best kind of sweat. Girl, I'm gonna make you sweat.
The entirety of that Saturday evening, Wout was telling me, don't forget, it's DNC 1. Every time you walk past me, DNC 1, DNC 1, DNC 1. He seemed to think that I was just gonna, you know, ride Scar 1 for two whole days. That wasn't impossible.
But, and you would have, right? You totally would have done it.
No, I don't think I would have dropped Scar 1 in the match where I dropped a negative 2 first.
Bristol.
Julian, I played him with his Nemo 3, and 90% sure he was dropping Nemo 3, and possibly the wrong decision, but I didn't feel great about dropping Scar into it, because I didn't want a defensive feat. Mm-hmm. So I thought, let's give this Denegra 2 thing a go. I wasn't super happy about that matchup either, but I thought, let's throw some dark horses in his direction and see how he handles it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds a good plan, I think.
Yeah, I learned some things about Denegra 2 that game. One of them is, in many matchups, throwing 4 incorporeal heavies up within less than 10 inches of his caster is a viable plan. If you want your opponent to burn about 15 minutes of his clock going, oh no, ooh, do I just die?
Makes people sweat bullets.
He was sweating bullets for sure. He killed 1.5 heavies on his, like, that turn between, like, Arlan magic weapons and things like that. But the carapace did its work and, you know, kept Nightmare on the board with some boxes and functioning systems. And Deathjack was, like, on 1 hit point or something. I had Nightmare within 10 inches of Nemo.
Okay.
But in the way were 2 units of Storm Lances. One unit, both min units. One unit up close against my wall of jacks that were right up in his face. And one unit, like, base to base in between 2 Storm Striders protecting Nemo. So I look at this and go, I've got Ghostly, I've got Curse of Shadows, I can get there, right? I can do it. And there's a few other plans going through my head as well, like, I can try and blow up a Stormlance with Hellmouth and pull Nemo a little bit forward so stuff can walk into him, all sorts. Like, after about 5 or 6 minutes of plotting, I had 3 or 4 different ways I figured I could get to Nemo. I picked the wrong one.
No.
Zenegra comes up and puts Curse of Shadows on the back unit, the ones protecting Nemo.
Right.
Which is what left me with the line of sight problem. Right, so I ended up having to dig my way through the front unit and then try and make line of sight from the back in the back unit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is difficult to describe without the visual representation. What I should have done is put the Curse of Shadows on the front unit, which would have allowed the Jax to walk through that unit and kill the defending unit to allow Nightmare through. Suffice to say, Denegra 2 had so many ways to kill Nemo that I got lost in the weeds and did the wrong one. And I was too far in before I realized the mistake didn't have consequences for like 6 steps. It seemed fine up until like literally 15 minutes later, because I had 40 minutes on my clock and I was taking my time because it was all in.
Mm-hmm.
Because those Striders were 100% killing Denegra next turn. So, long story short, Nightmare trampled through the Curse of Shadows guys, because you can move through them as a result of Curse of Shadows, but didn't have line of sight to Nemo, but that wasn't enough to kill him.
Hmm.
So
too bad.
Yeah, got him down to about 5. Like, my dice would need to be fairly crazy good to get away with that. And there's a few other complications in that assassination picture as well. Like, I had to be really careful with my Seethers, because there was a chance that they would berserk into the Stormstrider and get themselves pushed into Nightmare's way.
Oh, yeah.
So I was, like, angling the Seethers to try not to face the Striders and stuff. It was a real, like, weird little puzzle. But it did set the little fire in my head on the idea that Denegra 2 can throw threatening things in your face and then make things happen.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
Played her again the next round in a matchup against Lich 2 Dark Host. That was also really fun. Between, like, sprays and Hellmouths. Day 2 of the Belgian Masters was me playing the very basic version of what I think Denegra 2's game plan is.
Mm.
Try and manage their magical weapons, put 4 incorporeal heavies up in their face, then try and wangle an assassination the next turn.
Not a terrible idea.
It's a very simple version of the game plan, but I think it's one that can just apply to a lot of things. I can get into it a bit more since I've played a bunch more Denegra 2 games since, where there is other game plans present for her. You know, she has a huge toolkit. Last Sunday, I got to play the slow game with her, which is something I've always wondered about, but I'd always ended up kind of starting playing the slow game and then saw a chance to rocket the heavies forward and put really heavy pressure on my opponent. And when given the choice, I will always choose put heavy pressure on my opponent.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in this game on Sunday, I didn't have that option because he had a Sanctifier.
Ooh. Sanctifier.
Yeah. So I was just like, oh, there's this gigantic bubble of my feet does nothing. So I guess I'm going to hold on to my feet. Breath Stealer is it, both units of Idrian's, and kill the front ranks. Because he had to spread them out to avoid being Hellmouthed to death by double Hellmouths. So the front line and the second line were more than 3 inches apart. So you hit the Breath Stealer, you spray down the first few, and the second line is too far away to walk and shoot your stealth models.
Oh.
You know, they were like more than 9 inches away in most cases. And maybe one of them would get in and they'd have a go and they'd do some points. but in general, you're able to just like really carefully with Warwitch Sirens and Cephalix just slowly hose down the front while Deathjack stood at one end of the circular zone with a massive piece of rough terrain in the middle with the Sanctifier on the other side of the zone just looking at each other. Like, I can't feet to get across that rough terrain. And you can't come across that rough terrain to get me, so I'm just going to sit here and Breath Stealer that Idrian over there. Turn after turn, the Jacks were just like eyeballing each other down. He tried an aggressive play with the Avatar to get things rolling, but my Siren was able to shadow bind him and Nightmare got into him. But then I back up into my zone, he's backed up into his zone, we're kind of scoring equal points on our own zones. It's just ticking up on scenario.
Nice.
So we're both like just ticking away. And, like, occasionally contesting, but no one ever got, you know, 2 turns in a row without being contested. Very slowly withering down the Idrians until I could get my hands on that fucking Sanctifier. It took some doing, but eventually I got it. Like, eventually you just had to commit it to start doing work. And Nightmare was able to get to the Sanctifier, kill it, and then it was super happy fun times. You know, then it was, ha 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 ha, feed on all my Jacks, run everything forward. And, like, take a very sudden and powerful lead in scenario. You know, led to things being set up where I could just finish the game out. And kill Harvey in her face.
That was Harvey.
Of course, that was the other thing slowing the game down. Was, I couldn't kill anything that was within 10 inches of Harvey, because what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, if it mattered, he'd martyr her to death. And that's kind of why I was able to get her in the end, was I forced him to martyr down to, like, 1 hit point. Killed a bunch of his models. And then, you know, started throwing attacks at her. I think I got a Seether into her in the end, but that was after, you know, you did the classic Harvey play of force her to martyr down, you've still got more attacks, and she doesn't have enough hit points left to martyr, so you just go to town on that stuff you couldn't kill before. Take that. Order Allegiant of the Fist. You know what gets those guys? Hellmouth. Hellmouth gets those guys good. If you drag them out of the 10 inches.
Yeah, well, you know that the whole Harvey thing, it's if you look at it from a troll perspective, it really doesn't matter at all. You just, I don't know, RFB that shit. I have actually no idea if takedown actually works against martyr, though.
I don't think it does.
It doesn't?
Because I think takedown specifies no tough rolls.
It does.
But I don't think it stops healing. Yeah. So I think she can still martyr, but they don't get there. You don't get to double dip with tough rolls and martyrs, which is nice.
Yeah. It's already something, you know. I've always hated Harbi. Really hated playing against her. It's so frustrating.
She is very, very frustrating.
Actually, the only thing they changed about her is that they nerfed her feet, and that's all.
No longer a great feat.
Yeah, but apart from that, she's just more or less the same caster, and it's only now that Manoth players need to really go deep into the tank that she's making a bit of an appearance.
Well, she's incredible at SR 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah, she probably would be. She's always been incredible at scenario. Maybe because SR17 is so live that she is getting anywhere or that she's popular again.
Yeah, well, she locks it down. She just goes, nope, you are never winning a scenario.
Mm-hmm. No.
My models will contest forever.
Oh, yeah, unless you bring Grievous Wounds, right? Because that works on it, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like massive amounts of Grievous Wounds.
Continuous effect helps as well if you can spam them enough. Because then you won't master, because they're going to probably die to the continuous anyway.
Yeah. Just like a volume of attacks as well.
Mm. Yeah.
She's not unbeatable by any means, but it's just that model that matters. That one's never gone away.
Yeah.
You know, unless you can bring 5+ attacks to bear on that model, you've got no chance. Especially if you've got a canny Harpy player who knows which model matters. It's probably Legion of the Fist standing between two zones, contesting both.
Yeah, you know, that's a bit the feeling that I have with Madarak as well. That it's not just sanguine bonding anything, it's just the sanguine bond you use exactly.
Yep.
So basically going over my games, I had Madarak with all the champions and Band of Heroes. It's a list I stole from a Norwegian guy at Clockcon. Thank you, Stian. You're a fucking boss. I have never changed anything about that list. I just stole it, and it's been doing great for me. If you want to know what it is, just read News on Minis. It's there. And then the second list was Kulgrimma in Power of Dunia, which is basically the beast team of trolls. The advantage is it has Mulk, and new Mulk, so post-CID Mulk, is an arc node, which is very, very good. The downside is that that's only heavies. Troll heavies are really good, but just have a few dudes. And I'm a Krix player. A few dudes is not good. I need many dudes.
I really had that feeling playing with Tenegra 2. Every time I put down the army, I was just like, oh, what's happening? Every model's very valuable. How does this work? How do people play this, especially Legion?
I was listening, just a shameless plug, I was listening to Torbjorn's Legion podcast, and they just keep talking about Legion builds with few models. I'm like, oh man, how do you guys do that? And who wants that even? So few models. You need. So the first game I played this the barbell scenario breakdown. I also found out that it's really not my scenario. It's not fast enough, despite the fact that I'm playing trolls, and anybody would tell you that this is a troll scenario. It's not my scenario. It's just too slow. I can't start scoring points quickly enough, and then I run out of time and start focusing too much on killing many dudes instead of just winning the game.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I learned is that terrain can be incredibly important when you're not playing Krix, and that just how much you're, as a Krix player, you're entirely spoiled by your faction and by the way Incorporeal works and the way Ghostly works. There's a house blocking access to a zone. Who gives a shit? I'll just use whatever fancy trick I have because I'm Krix. And I'll just walk into that zone and, you know, do Krix things. When you're playing trolls, it's really a problem. So I actually lost my third game entirely because, you know, my opponent won the toss, chose the side that had easy access to the zones. I did it. He had, because it was a troll mirror, I'm still kind of bad at troll mirrors. It was a troll mirror, he played Kogrimmar, and with he could use his clouds to also even more limit my what I could do and how I could develop my guys in addition to the terrain, and I was just totally fucked. I mean, we there's an expression in Dutch which is running after. I mean, it's literally it says running after the facts, which means that you're chasing the facts. If you're not making the facts yourself. Yeah, it was horrible. I might have had a chance had I had fiery hot dice. I didn't have them, so yeah, it was not gonna happen. Anyway, on day two, I played much better. I think I had more sleep as well. I mean, organizing and playing at the same time is never a really good idea, especially not if you want to get results. And actually, I played the Madrek Mirror, where my opponent had exactly the same list as I had. I mean, exactly the same list. Down to a point. And as you know, Madrek is a little bit like the good old Meat Mountain, so not many things die. It's very bricky. It's very slow. It's take shit on the chin, and then take it from there, and retaliatory strike your way to victory, let's say. Well, my opponent had exactly the same list. I can tell you, it's not an easy puzzle to solve. And I was really, really proud, because I mostly have the feeling that I'm the better player, but I'm just not good at troll mirrors. I tend to lose troll mirrors against people who are intrinsically not as experienced as I am. And in this case, I was really happy to just win that one troll mirror, despite the fact that I'm more experienced as a player as the guy I played against. Mm. I was just like, okay, I got this down. I didn't clock myself, something that I always tend to do in troll mirrors. yeah, it was actually a good game. I learned a lot. And then I think my last game, what I did learn, or what I maybe really made a step forward in my games, is that I learned that sometimes it's enough to just kill a few dudes, score 1 point, don't spend too much clock, don't make too many attacks, just, you know, score a point, kill some dudes, put some shit in zones, and just pass turn. And do that just for 7 turns, and in the end, you have more points than the other guy, and you win. Done. That's something that I learned to appreciate, let's say. Not saying that I can manage it all the time, but I've learned to appreciate it. I'm going to get good at that. I know. I can tell. 7 turn deal.
Knowing when it's going to turn into a 7 turn game and thinking towards that is really important.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you've got a Madrek main... 1 mirror. I think you know it's going 7 turns.
Actually, I won on scenario.
Huh.
After 6 turns. But yeah. Yeah, no, you know that it's gonna be a 7 turn thing. I played it against Baldur 2 in my last game, and that's definitely a 7 turn thing. I mean, how the fuck are you ever gonna kill that big monkey? I mean, oh, it's gonna be there all game long. I mean, yeah, you can try to have the, I mean, and I think in Trolls there's like a moral victory. If you manage to proc, charge the Trolls and your opponent doesn't. Well, anyway, to the listeners who don't play Trolls, Charge of Trolls is you have a Stone Scribe Chronicler, which is a solo. You will put this as a buff on the troll unit, and the troll unit gets basically Gangfighter on War Beasts. So if you hit something that is in the melee range of War Beast in your army, you get +2 attack and +2 damage. And I think Charge of the Trolls is like one of the coolest abilities to proc, because you basically never use it. And if one player does it and the other one doesn't, then obviously that's the moral victory right there.
You get the moral victory for the style points of doing the slightly more complicated thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a style point.
Ryan, you had an event over the last couple of weeks as well, didn't you?
Yeah, we had Border Wars, which is primarily play at Bristol Independent Gaming, so short trip for me to go there. We normally see quite a lot of the Welsh boys at our tournaments from like Cardiff, Newport area around Firestorm. We end up a lot of their tournaments. So they started a Border Wars series. So we're going to go to them once a year and they're going to come to us once a year. So every 6 months apart, we'll basically scrap over like a shield. So it's a shield with like lots of little shields on it. And the premise is if you win, they did it on the basis of the first round, because then after that you end up, after the first round they tried to pair Big against Firestorm people where they could, but obviously not always possible depending on who's in the winner's bracket and who isn't. So Wales got that this year, 4-3 in the first round. We had a couple of games that went oddly where like one of the guys I travelled with was playing King of Nothing. They'd literally bought him that morning and set up all these clouds and King Camp in nothing, and then Soldier 2 just like Cyclones walk through the cloud wall, pops a little rag gun and shoots the King in the face. So he lost that one. He lost that one when he was quite well ahead. And yeah, just some really odd round one game. But I took I was debating taking Gay Fleet just because a lot of people aren't planning for it, and I thought I could terrorize them and then put it back on the shelf. But it wasn't in the case, and it was an early start, so I went with what I had in the case, which was Scar 1 Dark Coast, but only one race engine, because I've only got one, and then Gatsby 1 Scourge. The premise is the presence of the race engine in the Scar 1 list kind of telegraphed people's drops a little bit, and that they probably haven't got a lot of magic weapons in both lists, or both lists probably can't deal with Scar 1 featured race engine, even one, so... I managed to ride that to a win through, so we had Gorshade 4 in Defenders of Ios with like Halberdiers and Stormfalls and that kind of, that's a really bad matchup for Gorshade to see Scourge because like Stormfall they can't blow anything up with blast damage. The Halberdiers basically get wrecked on one flank if they want to. So the way it shakes out is his Halberdiers actually out-threaten Citrix's Raiders because he's got desperate pace. So what I managed to do is I blocked off, ran at two blood, which is Breath of Corruption them in the butt to make like a 7-inch wall that one unit of Halberdiers basically couldn't cross, and then set up my Raiders on that side in the zone. And then on the other side, well, I basically, because I don't want to feed to get the more Breath of Corruption out, so I set my Raiders are like way out wide on the flank, so they're all about like 6 inches away from the board edge.
Yeah.
So if he wants, they're all well within like threat range of his Halberdiers. But the problem is, I've still got my blood, which is an ambush. So basically, if he comes to kill the Raiders, even with repositioning his 2-inch melee, he can't actually get far enough away to not get wrecked by the blood witches. So he comes in anyway, and he has some quite tragic dice. Like Matt eights and Matt nines, like couldn't hit the fixer. It's like a 3-man CMA hit, failed to hit the Raider captain, which then meant I had like my solo running around sprinting and knocking things down, and kind of came to a head when he couldn't kill a single blood witch that was contesting his zone. That was literally the only thing I put in his zone just so he wouldn't score on my turn.
And he couldn't kill it back.
Couldn't kill it.
Oh my god.
So he just got sidetracked, like shooting other stuff, and then it's like, oh, I haven't killed the Blood Witch, bugger. Like after one, just kind of like we're playing standoff, so you've got two rectangles, two circles. And, like Gatsby loves that because he can just stand like one end of the zone, Barathrum stands the other end of the zone, and basically anything that comes to that zone is gonna die. Like so, it's that's a fun scenario for Gatsby. Then we had what did we have after that? Soldier 2 after that, I haven't seen Soldier 2 in a while. That was actually on stream, so that will probably end up on YouTube somewhere. So his pairing was Scrackles 2 in Legion of Steel and Soldier 2 in Jaws. Of course, Legion of Steel has got basically no magic weapons, so I've got Scar 1 with Wraith Engines. He can't drop Scrackles 2. So we end up with Gatsby 1 against Soldier 2. So I've got, and I won the roll off. So we're playing Recon 2, which is like two rectangles and flags. And so I won the roll off, and all his jacks are like a banner charge. They threaten what, 10 inches?
Yep.
They've got like a Jack Marshall Behemoth and like 5 or 6 heavies, some forces and some Widowmakers. Like he just hasn't got the bodies. He hasn't got the volume of attacks. And like Behemoth, he would be an equalizer for a lot of light infantry. Like the Raiders don't care. And I kind of tried to play him a little bit in that, because I knew if you put too many heavies in the zones, I can't really kill them because I can't stack enough Dark Shroud and I can't cycle Parasite effectively. So I kept giving him targets that weren't in zones. So I had, Behemoth on a hill at one point. So when I ran my Arknode up to Arc, Parasite, I purposely put the Arknode like wholly in the cloud. So figuring that if Behemoth moves, even with powerful attack, he's still probably quite likely to miss one of the shots. There's a turn after he aims, which is great. So then it means he's not moving like 4 inches closer to Gatsby.
Hmm.
And then I managed to, Barathrum managed to go and kill the objective, but again, Barathrum's quite threatening, but again, because he'd gone in on the objective, any jack that goes in to kill Barathrum is not stood in the zone.
Hmm.
So I'm just trying to leverage, I haven't had a raider captain like that ready to jump on his flag, but it just got to the point that he was, like, trampling a heavy just to get to my flag, and contest it. So it's kind of, I don't like to say games go down to the starting role, but that's one matchup where you really want to go first if you're playing Sorcery just to get that board space so you're not up against it out of the gate.
I was really interested in what you were saying there, actually, just about kind of picking apart an enemy army, not by killing stuff, but by drawing them out. Because that's a really big problem that Scourge has, is you put enough armor in front of it.
Yeah, you can't kill it all. So you kind of have to, it's almost like a bait and switch, and you go, well, and it gives you some stuff on this side, but like if you're playing, what's the two circles and two flies called now? Outflank still?
Yeah, I think so.
Like that, if you want to contest like one of the zones, you can just put like the unit way out wide and then like try and power through on the other side of the table so that whatever they use to kill your units that's way out wide, it's like out of the game for a turn or two to get back. That's the only problem I find with Scourge in that it is, because I play it with pretty much the Tixis for days, no gunslingers, just like double raiders, max witches, min witches, and then some filler and stuff. So you kind of have to be on it from the get-go with peace trading with infantry. Like if you can't peace trade with infantry meaningfully, then that list is just going to fold.
Yeah, I've been finding that as well, and like it's been irking me because on paper it should be so good, and in practice I keep finding it lacking at important bits.
Yeah, and it's not. I enjoy it because I think Gatsby 1 brings like quite good tools with Breath of Corruption, and like Parasite is obviously great. One thing I did find actually over those two games and the fourth game is a Crypt Mirror, is that actually the change into Blood Witches, I think, actually makes them a better unit. The loss of Entropic Force is not really here nor there, but actually Sidestep on the Blood Witches and Dark Shroud on the Hag is actually way more relevant than I thought it would be.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So Sidestep's really good. I'm looking forward to that with the Cat 3, since you've got Dash and it's gonna be so good.
There's something to be said as well for being able to apply Grievous Wounds with their blades instead of moving the Hag up and then the Hag gets capped.
Yeah, that's kind of, I knew like Kador Armour, it's one of those things, it's a little bit counterintuitive. You wouldn't think of like tanking armor or stacking boxes is actually the way to beat crits, but Grimkin can do it, Trolls can do it, Kador can probably do it as long as you pack magic weapon, that kind of thing. They're just kind of almost playing a bait and switch game.
Isn't Kador susceptible to just a feedback assassination?
Yeah, that's the other angle in that. So because you've got all these jacks and there's raiders and whips and witches and whatnot everywhere, it's just like Sorcerer can't spend too much focus allocating to the jacks to kind of do what they want to do, because she can't spend the focus on the feedback because it's not worth it. But she has to keep the focus for like the Breath of Corruption. So that was kind of I knew I couldn't beat the armor, so just play bait and switch and try and like.
I think I would have been gunning for the feedback assassination all game long. Just you take this one jack that is close to me, Parasite, Dark Shroud, cool.
Yeah.
How much boxes is your caster left? It's like the game I would be playing all day, every day. See that one jack there? okay, the Jag dies. How much boxes has your caster left?
I did fling some feedback damage on her, but it was earlier turns when there wasn't a huge amount going on, so I was able to just turn the focus and negate it, which was fine. Like, still killing the heavies and stuff. And then I had to play into Vindictus. I had to play into Menoth, but his other list was ammo, and let's be honest, he's not got an ammo into crit. His other list was Vindictus, and it's been a while since I played into Vindictus. Last time I played into Vindictus, I had Ghostly, and I just, he jammed me with his feet, so I jammed him back, and then he killed some of my dudes, and then my dude came back and killed his dude, and his dude didn't come back, so, that felt fine. Whereas this time I've got, like, a lot of, compared to pirates, quite expensive statistics that they die once and they stay, yeah, they die once and they stay dead, which sounds quite rubbish. So I thought I'd try Scar 1 into that. And
things and, not coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, what's up with that anyway? Come on. Just dying and staying dead? Who does that? I mean, seriously, what are you, trolls?
Quitters. That's how you do it. Quitters. Pull themselves up by their bootstraps out of the grave. Get back to work.
Absolutely. So it's quite sad because he's running, I don't know, I've seen some build floating around for double errand, but I don't know how they all shake out after that. But like the double errands is just horrific if you have to go second against it because it's all actually super fast and it's all up in your grill and it's all like got unyielding because of the errand seneschal guy hanging around and you can't shoot the errand seneschal guy because if you shoot him, like normal errand just dies. So. Like, my Scar won turn one, so bearing in mind I'm playing double Bane Riders, one max, one min. Dara Wrath and Erase Engine. My whole army shuffled forward about 4 inches. Cause I was like, I can't, he didn't feet top of one, which I've seen some Vindictus players do, which I think is a mistake. Like, going second was horrible. And we're playing Spread the Net. So scenario is like quite live, relative to some of the other scenarios in the pack. So like, kind of tried to set up to make sure that I can contest his flag and can contest his zone. Cause if I can't, then that's game. He does like the feet top of two and like some errant come in and jam. And a whole bunch of errants are hanging out in the middle zone. He's got like Exemplar on. Both sides basically sat on his zone and his flag, like a seneschal hanging out on the flag. So I was like, well, I've kind of got to feet, not defensively this guy, because I'm getting some stuff, but kind of more defensively than offensively, because if I don't feet now, then basically I'm not going to have anything left next turn. Because my armor stats with the Exemplar aren't high enough to basically not die. So what we managed to do was Scar feeted on a whole unit of riders, herself, the Inflictor, both Stalkers, and Dara Wrath, I think. This game is on stream as well, so I'll probably have to dig out the link and put them on the Facebook page. So I managed to kind of use ghostly walking, so kind of walking 8 inches with, 7 inches with Bane Riders and, like, stabbing things in the back of the head and stuff like that, and repoing so that I could get close enough to his Exemplar that he couldn't charge.
Mm-hmm.
Then facing them so that he couldn't... No, I can do, like, angle charges, but not them not leave your melee range, so you still get the charge bonus. So I'm kind of trying to be careful with my facing so that he couldn't get the charge. And then Dara Wrath shuffled up with Mortal Fear up, so effectively got a bunch of Bane Riders in his face that are armor 25 functionally. The Inflictor's chilling in the zone with Scar's feet on him, so his turn. The Inflictor, Inflictor's always been okay, but with Scar it always seemed to be excellent. Like he had a whole bunch of Exemplar charge it. A Sanctifier came in and bought the Inflictor on the head. And out of all that the Inflictor took 2 points of damage, so I was quite happy with that. And then just the, like on the other side, like where my flag was, like the armor stacking with Mortal Fear actually shook out in that his Knights Exemplar, when they mini-feated, he had the officer charge a Bane Rider that stood next to Tartarus, pretty much. So if he killed the Bane Rider, he'd overtake and probably chop Tartarus's head off because I forgot the feet on him. So because of Mortal Fear, he left that Bane Rider on one box. That meant the Bane Rider survived and Tartarus survived, which was massive. And then the same again for an Exemplar charging into a Bane Rider with another Bane Rider hanging out behind it. So the kind of the Mortal Fear swung it from like getting totally wrecked despite my feet to almost wrecked. And then just kind of scar things happened where the Inflictors started beating up stuff in the zone. I managed to push through with Riders and score his zone. I kind of snowballed from there. And then when I started, kind of felt I was starting to get a little bit ahead, Scar kind of shuffled up to the edge of the cloud so she could charge into the zone next turn. But it turned out it wasn't needed because it kind of ran out of models a little bit. And the scenario kind of got away from him. But I was actually quite surprised at how Scar handled it, even though she hasn't got... But let's be honest, she's not a tricksy caster. It's not like she's going to do something that you never saw coming. Not like the Hellmouth shenanigans like that. You can't plan for the vectors.
The only trick Scar ever pulled is surprising people with the Sacrificial Strike, because people forget that it exists.
Yeah.
So every now and again you're like, that I have a Gremlin Swarm that you won't be able to shift from this zone. And she's like, gotcha.
I actually didn't use that. I forgot about it. So, yeah.
I even didn't know that Sack Strike was magical.
And isn't an attack, so ignores stealth.
Yeah, that is great.
So Scar actually threatens Gremlin Swarms from quite far away, personally?
Yeah, and probably she threatens the stone, the Troll Stone, because it's not an attack.
In fairness, though, if she's within 9 inches of a Creel Stone, she's very in the middle of everything.
Yeah. Just a little bit, yeah.
Not necessarily dead next turn, but it's not going to look good, that's for sure.
No.
Or you're anyway winning. Either you're winning to such an extent with Kriggs that it doesn't really matter. And then also ask yourself the question, why the fuck are you standing in the middle of the board? Sex, strike, real stone. Or she is, it's looking that bleakly that she has to be there that, it wasn't going to work anyway, so.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's that bleak, she has to come forward anyway, and it's the thing that swings it. So...
Yeah. I'll grant you that 1% of games.
Like, Scar rarely gets into a position where things are that bleak.
True.
Normally she's the one that's getting dead. That's how you lose games with Scar. I think that's one of the other reasons that Scar Dark Host is so stupid, is she has automatic clouds to hide behind.
Yeah, feet and then run away. Hide behind the cloud.
Yeah. Stand behind those clouds for the rest of the game.
There's a guy in my meta who started playing Vlad 2. Not a good idea.
That's bad.
Vlad 2. I mean, that is like a... Didn't we, as a Prophets and Wizards, say that Vlad 2 was going to make a comeback?
We did.
I think... Did we?
Suggest that. I was going to try and, segue us back into Kriggs. That's what I was going for there.
Scar 3.
Scar 3, there we go. That's the thing that happened this week. So the question is it worth shipping a Black Anchor model to Europe?
Yes.
I like the pun there, is it worth shipping?
I'm always down for some shipping for all of its various definitions.
It's fucking huge. I mean, seriously, if you look at it next to a Wraith engine, which is already not easy to transport. I mean, the thing is like double as big. It's like Old Witch big. And when I see Old Witch, I'm thinking, okay, why the hell does a model have to be that big? I mean, it's great if you're playing in your garage.
Tall.
Yeah, if you want to travel somewhere, you actually just need a case to put that model in.
Yep. I play a lot of games in my house now, so that's good.
Which is a good thing if you have Scar.
And the game store is not that far from my house. But for anything international, good God.
It's not going to happen.
I'd have to check a whole suitcase and put it in there in its own case. which doesn't sound great. But at the same time, and I know we've talked about this before, quite aside from a big, beautiful model, she's so good.
She is.
So, so good. Like, she's just got some spicy number buffing.
She's got, you know, she's got something that we're not used to. But, I mean, the guided fire, that's just, well, unseen. That's jamais vu, as they say in French. But is that a reason to play her? I don't know yet.
I think guided fire is the bottom of the list in terms of reasons to play her. I mean, I was thinking about it today. Yeah, I was thinking, like, with her, maybe you just throw in two defilers, not for their arc node, for guided fire sprays. Maybe just run four of them and just go, like, fuck it, that's my battle group. It's four defilers. I have that one glorious turn on the feed where I cast it for free to clear space for your monstrous army of speed 7 Banes to come crashing into the opposing army with their POW 13 Bane Warriors.
Is that the dash you're talking about? Or, oh no, it's the Draconic Blessing.
Yeah, you're stacking dash plus Dara, you're stacking Draconic Blessing plus Dark Shroud, and then you're stacking your Wraith Engine plus D-Cell. You're just doubling up all those bonuses, and the numbers get stupid.
Maybe.
But then people will just shoot her, right? I mean, she's defense armor. She's defense 12, armor 19. I mean, that's not bad, but it's not really awesome.
1221 is plenty.
Well, actually, she's living, right?
Yeah, so you can't Wraith Engine her up to 23, but...
No.
But she's got D-cell up, so 1221.
Ooh.
And you can't win a couple.
Can you bring... What's it called? This Witch Croc.
To make her own. No, you can't. No. Of course you can't.
Witch Croc doesn't work for Kriegs, right?
No. I never would have thought to check, though. That was almost brilliant. That was almost complete genius.
Almost.
No, 1221 with...
26 boxes.
And a couple of focus is fine. I wouldn't be that worried.
Thing is, though...
And she can run that army. She can run that army from the back of the board.
Yeah, she just... Projects her control area forward.
Yeah, she projects her aura and fires a couple of guns.
Yeah, the thing is, the funny is, if you could actually just put a blood priestess there and then, you know, have her suffer and then never die ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you wouldn't be doing the gorgeous stacking of everything with Banes.
Sure.
I'd be doing it with a boarding party and stuff instead. Because it's actually relevant stat boost for them, I think. So you go from speed 6 to 7, which means they go from threatened 10 to 11, which basically means they match most things. They go from armor 15 against guns with boxes, which is okay but not great, to armor 17 with guns, which is actually really good.
Yep.
You get access to Charybdis on Icos.
Yeah.
So that with... what's it called? I call it Shipstream, but it's called something else.
Dark Wave.
Slipstream, yeah. It's called Slipstream.
So you end up with, like, Charybdis threatened, like, way downtown. And even just with Gangfighter and Draconic Blessing, you're swinging PNS 20. So if you can get a Dark Shroud in there, then PNS 22 is quite respectable from 16 inches away.
Seems all right, yeah.
Where'd you get the Dark Shroud from, though? Because we're talking Slaughterfleet, right? Yeah, where do you get the Dark Shroud from in Slaughterfleet?
Ragman.
Oh.
So Ragman, because Scar 3 is living, Ragman can sack pawn to Scar 3, and then Scar 3 has sucker from the Blood Priester, so all the shitty shots go on the single wound Blood Gorges and stuff. Now, all the high power stuff goes on the shitty Blood Gorges, and then all, like, the POW 10s go on the Black Oak and Ironmonger, because she's living, but she's also repairable. So the Ironmonger can take the shot, and if she does take any damage, then they can repair her.
Nice.
They're also effectively weapon masters against Jax. So if you stack in, like, Draconic Blessing, those Blood Gorges are actually relevant. And they also bring Curse as another map buff for your Jax. So I'm looking at running her with just two Leviathans in a battle group.
And a so Gangfighter,
Gangfighter alone is not quite enough. Like, Mat 8's acceptable, but it's not Crick's acceptable. Whereas map 10 with Gangfighter and Curses,
a lot more like it.
And then that's with what? So even without Dark Shroud, you've got like a map 10, PNS-19 Leviathan in melee. If you don't go into melee, then it just sits and shoots you with a pop gun all game.
Yeah, why not? Well, because you buff basically everything.
Absolutely. Any team is viable, I think.
You know, if you go into Black Industries, you're stacking Carapace and Deflection. If you go into Scourge, you're stacking Dash with the Stixis speed, and you're buffing Strength. If you go into Slaughter Fleet, you've got that all the combined arm shenanigans, and you've got Recursion with the Living Models as well.
Yeah.
Even Infernal Machines, you've got Speed 11 Soul Hunters, baby.
Ridiculous.
Infernal Machines is the location for my jankiest Scar 3 list.
Yeah, definitely.
So hear me out. Your friendly unit is Cephalic's Drudges.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you get it. You get it.
Yeah.
So you're I don't get it yet, so just take some time and tell me. Walk me through.
Your friendly unit is a unit of Drudges. You also take some Mechanothralls, and you take your free Necrosurgeons. So, your Drudges get killed and turned into corpses.
Yes.
Then Scar returns models to the Drudges unit because they're partisan, so they are friendly Crick's models, returns models to the Drudges unit, and then you turn some corpses into Mechanothralls, rinse and repeat.
Or Biothralls. Or Biothralls,
indeed.
Ooh,
Biothralls and Dash. And again,
and Dara.
You throw Dara in there when you got an undead army and Dash, so you've got your Speed 8 Mechanothralls, your Speed 11 Soul Hunters. So yeah, I think that might actually work because it's another one of those, like, it's an engine and you should never not test a recursion engine.
Yeah.
Like, also, once you figured out a recursion engine, you test the hell out of it because they're always the most broken thing in the meta.
You know, one other thing is that in Infernal Machines, you can actually play Fatties, Shield Guard, Fatties, help me out here, Brute Trolls.
And they'll be 14-18.
Yeah, and you have the Shield Guard thing, just in case, you know, just in case.
Yeah, yeah.
You also have the Draconic Blessing on units that have Brute Trolls in them, potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to go a slightly different direction, you could put a Sepulcher in there, probably. I haven't tried to build the list in detail, but you chuck a Sepulcher in. Sepulchers are pretty good, like, benefit from the Guided Fire fairly nicely as well.
Yeah,
because it has a lot of shots, right? And it has never enough focus to boost all that shit.
Yeah, exactly. I think that particular trick with Cephalics as a friendly unit that gets reinforcements is pretty freaking cute.
I think it's beautiful.
I also think that you should consider throwing in, if you're running your in Dark Host, put some strong consideration into throwing in Overlords as your friendly unit.
Yeah.
Because getting to recur those guys is fucking cool. You generally send one of them or maybe two of them out to do really sweet up close sprays. And the other one like hangs out behind a forest. so you use one guy back there as the anchor so you can keep dropping two more back in, and like that's a lot of sprays over the game.
Yeah.
Kind of like recurring Balthralls back in the day. I really want to test a list making Balthralls with Necrosurgeons, because I haven't played Infernal Machines since that change, and that seems awesome.
Yeah,
I've done it with Coven.
Because they can occultation the Biles to...
Yes, for example, and they have Ghost Fog.
Mm.
Terrain, in general, is always the weak spot of any Infernal Machine. Mm.
Truth.
And that's a reason why I would always, start thinking about it. You always want a caster that has something or a way to give Pathfinder. But yeah, you can just put in, I don't know. I mean, it's Infernal Machine, so you're not really banking on the free shit anyway. So you could just have, I don't know, what's his face, Saxon in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The battle group is just Leviathan.
It's whatever. You just fill it up.
Oh, two Leviathans is too much, right?
Feel like anything less than two Leviathans is not enough, but two Leviathans cost too many points. That's my problem with Leviathans.
I don't know. You're Infernal Machines. I mean, if you would play it in Dark Host, you could go Gas Grader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's dead handy, and it also, the points work out really well for that. Like, you just get the list you want with double desecrators. It's... The Dark Host list is the simplest and most kick-in-the-face strong Scar 3 list, I think. But there's a whole bunch of other ones that are a bit more clever.